All right, good morning, everybody. It is 11:20, Monday, November 8th. We're still doing NMR. We're doing some more challenging ones in a way. I'm going to go to let's start a new. It's there. And then I need to come back to Chem-Ed. Will be additional resources. I'm going to go to organic structure elucidation. And on this website, I want to do, I think it's 64, the last one that's on here. So this has a different way of doing it. It gives you the problem 64 and the formula C10H12O. So let's go, this is number 64. On organic structure elucidation. And we've got a formula which is C10H12O. So how about units of unsaturation? What are we thinking here for units of unsaturation? Units of unsaturation are always going to set us up for knowing kind of what we're dealing with. So this has got 2 times 10 plus 2. So that's going to be 22. We've got 12 in the formula. So that's 5 units of unsaturation. With 5 units of unsat, I immediately, anytime I'm over 4, let's say greater than or equal to 4 units, I always sort of assume aromatic. So this is likely to be aromatic. Plus, it's got either a carbon-carbon double bond or a carbon-oxygen double bond is a possibility, or possibly another ring system. So I always just sort of list out my possibilities in terms of what's there. So I've got aromatic plus one of these others. And that would take me to 5 units. Now, in terms of looking at these, the spectra on these are higher quality. And so when we look at 64 and we look at the proton NMR, this is a 500 megahertz NMR. And on the 500 megahertz NMR, they give me 3 areas to look at in terms of details. And you just click on the box, you get the detail, you click back on the screen, and it takes you back. And so we'll be able to get each one of the details in figuring out what they are, which is really pretty nice. So I'm going to grab this first one, just like we normally do. And then I'll grab each one of the details and bring them in as well. And I think I can do this all at one time. All right, so I zoomed in on the first. Zoom in on the second. That guy. And then finally this guy. Let's see if it brings them all in at the same time. I think it did. And it'll probably throw them all on different pages. or first getting them all moved into the same page. All right, there's the whole spectrum. And I'll move all these guys up to the top. Almost there, sorry. Just takes a minute to go through and get them all organized. All right, so I think these guys are the two at the beginning. These are the aromatics that are over there. Those are those two. And then this guy is the one in the middle. All right, so we can see everybody that's there now. So these two here integrating for 3 and 2, they're there. That guy integrating for 2 is a triplet. And these guys integrating for 2, 1, and 2 are right there. And the nice thing about this website that I like is that they give you the absolute integrations. So if we take this and we add them up, it's 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and I've got all the protons there. So they don't make me mess around with trying to integrate it with lines and figuring out the line heights and all of that stuff. They just give me the full integration values. So this website, in that respect, is actually really pretty nice. And when you look at the signals are pretty clear in terms of, you know, this is a clear triplet. This is a triplet. This one is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's a sextet. Triplet, triplet, doublet. So it's really easy to see the splitting patterns most of the time on this website. And yeah, there's some little artifacts that show up in these. There are some secondary splittings that are showing up. Like this is a triplet of triplets. So what you see is a triplet at the top of each one of these peaks that is sitting in there. So there's some long-range coupling constants that sit in these as well. That can actually be helpful as long as you don't let it get distracting. And knowing the difference between a regular coupling constant and a long-range coupling constant are some of the things that can be helpful when we start getting up into a bigger spectrum like this website. All right, so let's take and make our table. Proton NMR. Number of environments. So how many environments do we have here?
Six.
Six different environments. Okay, with six environments, I'm going to work and just give these sort of round numbers. It looks like I've got 1.0. because it doesn't have to be perfect. Let's make the table first. Parts per million.
Why don't we have 7?
Because this right here is not integrated.
Ah. So they kind of like took it off for us.
Yeah, it's solvent. They won't integrate the solvent.
Got it.
So that's solvent that's showing up. And I didn't look to see what solvent they're using here, but I think that's CDCl3, and that is a proton showing up in the CDCl3 in the solvent.
Got it. Okay. Sorry.
That's okay. That was a good question. Parts per million, integration, multiplicity, number of neighbors, assignment. Okay, so we've got a signal at 1.0. We've got a signal at 1.9. It looks like 3.0. And then at what I would say is 7.4, 7.5, and maybe 8.0. Numbers may be a little bit different than that if we were to drill down into them a little bit, but that's close enough. They don't have to be, you know, a few tenths of an integration or excuse me, a few tenths of a parts per million is not going to make a difference in what we assign it to be. So we just need to get close so that we know what, if you used A, B, C, D, it would be almost as good. All right, so the integration on the first one is 3. Its multiplicity is this signal right here. So that's a very clear triplet. And remember that triplets are always 1 to 2 to 1 ratios. If the ratios are off, then it doesn't help. I mean, then it's something else. It's not a triplet. So this is a triplet. Number of neighbors that a triplet has, this follows the n plus 1 rule. So this means that it came from 2 neighbors. So we look over here and we look to see what was the signal. We subtract 1 from it. And we can tell how many neighbors it had. Assignment. We could get the NMR table for this. I had that NMR table this morning. Maybe I'll go grab it real quick. That's the one that I want. So out at 1.0, these are NHs and OHs, but they're also alkyl groups. And what I'll say is that these things that exchange on this website will always tell you if it's a proton that exchanges. So this website, if it doesn't say exchanges, then we know it's not an NH or an OH. So this is just a regular alkyl group. And because it's integrating for 3, what would I say that this most likely is?
A CH3?
Yep, that's it. If it were 2, I'd say it were a CH2 group. If it were 1, I'd say it were a CH group. If it were 4, I would say it's 2 CH2 groups. If it were 6, it would be 2 CH3 groups, or possibly 4 CH2s, but that becomes less likely. So I kind of look at how many it integrates for, and I come up with a group that it corresponds to. One other thing here may not be important just yet, or might be. This is roofing slightly. And that roofing is going to tell me what may be causing it to be split, because there's lots of different splittings that are going on here. These roofing signals may help me to figure out what's splitting what. Notice that roofing, that those are all sort of roofing in those directions. This guy is roofing slightly that direction. And this guy is not really roofing at all, or very, very slightly in that way. Very slightly in that direction. All right, so 1.9, that is this signal here. This signal is integrating for 2. And then I need to look at it and I need to decide what pattern that is. So remember the patterns. Doublets, triplets, quartets, pentets, sextet, and septet keeps going on. So one of the things that I notice is this little pattern right here. Even, odd. When I have 2 peaks of about the same height, I'm either at a quartet or a pentet. If I've got 1 peak that is higher than the others, then I'm likely, sextet, then I'm either at a pentet or something else. And so these 2 peaks being equal in height and how they're symmetrical going across, this is 2, 4, 6. So, and they are looking like this is about half the height of that. So these really are looking like they're 1.
You don't think it's 8?
I don't think it's eight.
That little step at the edge doesn't matter.
No, I don't think so. I think it's 1 to 5 to 10 to 10 to 5 to 1. And we could take it and we could make a ruler and we could like go it out. But I think that that's the most likely thing that that is. So that's looking like it's a sextet to me. In the way that that's working out. So multiplicity, sextet, number of neighbors. How many neighbors does it have?
Five.
Good. Okay. Assignment here. With five neighbors, this is looking like a CH2 group. I'm saying that again because of the two, but it has five neighbors, which means that five neighbors, the only way to get five neighbors is to put something like a CH3 on one side and a CH2 on the other side. And that's how I can get to five neighbors. There's not another easy way to get to five neighbors. All right, the next signal is this CH, whatever this is here, this two protons that are here. And that guy is up here. This is a clear triplet. So this is two protons, triplet. How many neighbors does a triplet have?
Two.
And then this is, again, another CH2. And it likely has a CH2 next to it in order to turn it into a triplet. It's also down at 3.0, which leads me to believe that it also has some sort of electron withdrawing group on it. Because it's starting to be pulled down now beyond the normal range. Now these guys all fall in the aromatic range. So now we're starting to look at the aromatic protons. And at 7.5, I've got two for a triplet. That's two neighbors. I'm just going to say these are aromatic. The other one is one proton, and it is also a triplet. So this is one proton, triplet, number of neighbors, two, aromatic. And then the last one was two, and it's a clear doublet. That's this signal here. And that means that it has one neighbor and it's aromatic. But how many total aromatic protons do I have? I've got two.
Five.
Yeah, five. So what does that mean in terms of five aromatic protons?
A monosubstituted ring.
There we go. So when it's monosubstituted, do not fight with it because you don't need to work out the splitting patterns. You can spend a lot of time trying to make sure that the splitting patterns are working out, but if it's monosubstituted, it's monosubstituted. Let it go. That's one less thing you got to spend brain power on trying to sort out. Okay. So now these aromatics, they're all splitting each other. So the aromatic protons are what are causing the triplet, triplet, doublet, and they're all splitting each other. And it usually works out that this is the doublet, triplet, triplet. The doublet integrates for two, the triplet integrates for two, the triplet integrates for one. That's generally how that works out. And that's the way that this is working out exactly. You'll see doublet for two, triplet for one, triplet for two. And it worked out just right. That means that everything else that's going on up here, these guys are all splitting each other. So I have a CH2, which has five neighbors, a CH2 and a CH3 on either side. So these two are probably connected. And then I have another CH2, which is being split by the first CH2, so that these three things are probably in a chain in the way that they're working out, that they have to be connected CH2, CH2, CH3 in order for them to give this subunit. So these two are splitting each other, and these two are splitting each other, and they're all connected. So now I need to go back and I need to look at and think about what it is that I've got. So far, what I've got is probably CH2, electron withdrawing group, CH2, CH3, aromatic group. And when I put all that together, that gives me 6, 7, 8, 9. So that's C9, H5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's C9, H12. And my formula was C10, H12O. C10, H12O. So that means that out of that guy, I'm missing a carbon and an oxygen and one unit of unsat. Because this only gives me four units of unsaturation. And I have five in the total molecule. So what does it mean then that if I had one unit of unsaturation and I'm missing a carbon and an oxygen, what does that likely imply?
Some double bond. It's unlikely it's another ring, I guess.
Right. It's unlikely it's another ring. It's likely that it's a double bond. So it's likely then that this is really a carbonyl. Now, if it is a carbonyl, do you know where it shows up in the carbon NMR? If we go look in the carbon NMR, do you know where a carbonyl shows up? Do you know what to look for?
What you mean on the spectrum?
On the spectrum. Where on the spectrum a carbonyl shows up?
Above 150?
Yeah, greater than 150. Up into the 200s, depending upon the type of the carbonyl. But let's go take a look at the carbon NMR without doing the whole thing. Ah, what's that 200.4? That's likely my carbonyl. So here what I have is I have, well, let's screenshot this and we'll bring this in and we'll diagram this out. Okay. So here's the carbon NMR. This region here, these guys are alkyl. This is likely a carbon connected to some type of electron withdrawing group. These are aromatic. And that's some sort of carbonyl that I've got. So when I look at my parts per million and my assignments and my number of environments, number of environments is equal to 1, 2, 3, This one is not integrated or no numbers put on it. This one is solvent. So when there's no numbers put on it, we can assume that that one's a solvent is being left out. So I've got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I've got 8 environments. I've got what looks like 15 parts per million, something that looks like close to 20, something at 40, looks like 128. Well, I guess they actually have the numbers on there for me. I didn't have to like go crazy. 128, 128.5. .132, .137, and then finally 200. So these guys here are all aromatic. This one is my carbonyl. And then these are all alkyl. And 8 chemical environments, which is going to be important in deciding later on. So let's go with the different groups that we've got. We know that we have this chain, aromatic, carbonyl. We're getting the same thing out of here. So this is the parts that I've got. I've got a CH3, I've got a CH2, I've got a different CH2, I've got a carbonyl, and I've got an aromatic ring. And I'm thinking that these guys are arranged in this pattern because I'm getting triplet, sextet, triplet in terms of the pattern that I was getting there. And that's the only way that I can get that triplet, sextet, triplet, and that this is monosubstituted. So that's leading me to a molecule that the only way to assemble this is to put the carbonyl there and to do it that way. Because this brings in the CH3, the CH2, the CH2, the carbonyl, the aromatic ring system. Now, I could say, well, maybe I need to consider some other options. And so maybe I should draw just a few of the other possibilities to be able to eliminate them, even though I have one that I think is my most likely. And I could even put the aldehyde in there. Okay, so these are my 4 possible ways of putting the thing together, ignoring the fact that my spectrum was telling me that they're most likely in a chain. So I'm going to ignore that for a moment, and I'm just going to draw the different possibilities from the parts, saying these are all the different possible things that I could get. Now, one of these I could cross off really quickly, which is the easiest one here to cross off. So, what's that? The one with the aldehyde. How come, Travis?
Because we didn't see that in the spectrum.
Yeah, number one, you didn't see an aldehyde in the spectrum. There was no aldehyde proton. But number two, the aldehyde has no methyl. So with no CH3 group, that guy's really out. So it doesn't have the CH3. Also, we could say that there was no 12.0 in the proton NMR. corresponding to an aldehyde proton. Aldehyde protons come way, way far downfield. So the fact that there's no methyl, there's no aldehyde proton, that one is immediately out. Now we've got to look at the rest of these and we've got to start to figure out the rest of these. So one way to do this is to look at, number one, the chemical environments for both the proton and the carbon, but then the multiplicities of the splittings that we expect. And what do we expect from each of these? And this is the exercise that I really want you guys to be able to do. So let's look both at proton environments, carbon environments, and then we'll also do the multiplicities for each of these. And what I'll do is I'll do CH2, CH2, CH3. We'll leave the rings out of it because I think that we can decide it without the rings. And I'll just draw them out so that you guys can see them. CH2, CH2, carbonyl, CH3. You need to kind of learn to do this in bond line formula as opposed to writing it out. But for right now, let's just do it. How many hydrogen environments total for the whole molecule? How many hydrogen environments do we expect for this molecule? So hydrogen environments, yeah, this is 1, 2, 3. And then here we have 4, 5, 6. So I would say 6 proton environments in that guy. How many carbon environments? I'll change color to do the carbon environments. So the carbon environments, I would say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's 8 carbon environments. If I go through and do this one, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This also has 8. And for hydrogen, it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Switch back to carbon, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hydrogen, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They all have 6 and 8.
Is that typical that you have so many that are essentially the same?
Not always.
Okay.
No, I would say it's interesting that they all came out the same in this one, but it just means that we can't use chemical environments to discern. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, but chemical environments are not helping us. So that means that we really need to go to the multiplicity. The reason I do chemical environments first is because chemical environments is an easier thing to assess than multiplicities, and you're likely to make less mistakes. So I typically go for the for the chemical environments first, then I go to multiplicities. All right, so this CH3 out here, what do I expect it to show up as? How many neighbors does it have?
Two.
It's got 2 neighbors. So what does it turn into? With 2 neighbors, first signal should be a triplet. How many neighbors does this one have?
5.
It's got 5 neighbors. So that's going to be a sextet. So that's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's going to be the sextet. Number of neighbors that this guy's got?
2.
So that's going to be a triplet. And so integration wise, this is going to integrate for 2, for 2, and for three. All right, next up, number of neighbors.
One.
Two. Yeah, so it's not the group. It's not how many groups are next to it. It's how many are in the group. So here we've got two neighbors, so this is going to be a triplet. It's going to integrate for three. So we have a triplet for three. This one here has these guys as neighbors. So that gives it three neighbors. That means it's going to be a quartet. It's going to integrate for two. And then how many neighbors does this one have?
Is that zero?
Zero. It's got zero neighbors. And so with zero neighbors, it's a singlet integrating for two. All right, how many neighbors does this methyl have?
Zero.
Zero. So it's going to be a singlet. That singlet's going to integrate for three. Number of neighbors of this guy?
Two.
Two. And so that turns this into a
triplet
integrating for two. And this one has two neighbors and is a triplet and integrates for two. So there's what we expect. We expect triplet, sextet, triplet, triplet, quartet, singlet, or singlet, triplet, triplet. Right? And I haven't arranged them in the right order. What I would expect, well, I have arranged them actually fairly closely, except for this last one. This one.
Is there a name for like the order that they are in a molecule versus the order they're in the spectrum?
No.
No.
No. So this one and this one, we would expect fairly close to each other downfield. And this one, more like that. So that's pretty much how they would be expected to show up. This guy closest to the electron withdrawing group would be farthest downfield. And I might say it's maybe even a little bit farther off than the rest of them. These two guys would be a little closer to each other. And this one a little farther upfield. And then these two here. And so what I'm doing is I'm taking whatever is closest to the carbonyl and I'm moving that downfield. And so those guys all get moved downfield because they're closest to the carbonyl, the strong electron withdrawing group, because that's what the electron withdrawing group is. So now it's just a matter of going back to the proton NMR. We've taken all of our possibilities. We go back to the proton NMR and we decide which one looks like the right one. So the proton NMR looks like it is triplet, triplet, sextet, or triplet, sextet, triplet. That's these three here. Triplet, sextet, triplet. The only one that gives the sextet, triplet, sextet, triplet, is that one. And that's the one. Okay. So are we understanding why it's so important to draw all the possibilities and be able to eliminate them? It's more important when the spectra is hard to read. it becomes even more critical when the spectrum becomes hard to read, because this one, because the spectrum was so easy to read, it was easy to see that these three were connected together. And because these three were connected, there was only one possibility. But if I didn't know that, then at least being able to draw them and then to hammer out what the pattern is that I expect to see leads me to the right answer. That's the important part. Okay, let me see what I've got next. I don't want to do 16. 16's ugly. 19. 19 is better. I'm thinking 19. Let's go see. Nineteen is a moderate problem. 19 has C9H7NO4. Let's see if I did that right. C9H7NO4. This is the first time that we've had a nitrogen in the problem. So let me just remind you that with units of unsaturation, it's Cn, and for saturated, it's H2n plus 2 plus 1 for every nitrogen, subtract 1 for every halogen. So to figure out the units of unsaturation on this for saturated, I'm going to take 2 times 9 plus 2 plus 1 for the nitrogen. So that's what, 18, 20, 21? So I've got 21 minus 7. Divided by 2 gives me 7 units of unsaturation.
If this gives you a half unit of unsaturation, you made a mistake, right?
That's right. Okay, so everybody see how I did that? So if you get a half unit of unsaturation, then you did something wrong. Okay, this also has a lot of oxygens and the nitrogen. And so that's a lot going on in this. I've also given you some other hints along the way when I hit something greater than or equal to 4 units of unsaturation. What should I be considering? I should be considering it's aromatic. So this is likely aromatic. But it's aromatic plus 3 more units. That's a lot more units to consider. So the question is, how am I going to get 3 more units out of this? Because that could be another ring, a couple of double bonds, all kinds of things. And with 4 oxygens, I don't know what I'm in for here. So we could be in for some crazy stuff here. Okay, I should be on this note. I made the wrong, there we go. All right, let's go get the spectrum and see where the spectrum takes us and how many detail things we need to hit. So this has got a different solvent. This is in DMSO, D6 DMSO. So it's deuterated DMSO. All the protons are swapped for deuteriums, but that means it'll have a different signal in it for solvent in a different location than the CDCl3 spectrum we've been looking at. So we'll just have to be careful when we look at the solvent or where the solvent is. And so the solvent they've got here, it's showing up in a couple of places and it's unlabeled. So the only peaks that are labeled are between 6 and 8. And then notice what's down there by 10. There's one that says exchanges down by 10, right? And you can't see it, but they're telling you that it's there. It's just too small to see, but they are telling you that it's there. So there's one that exchanges that's down south of 10. And then these guys, they're actually giving me J values. So this is a spectrum that is more complicated, that's got a lot more going on that we're going to have to work out. So let's take this. Ooh, thank you. Let's take this. And I'm going to leave the title in it. And then I'm going to grab this detail. And for the detail, I'm going to tighten it up a bit. Okay, and I've only got one detail to deal with, so this is going to make this one easier. Maybe it's under there. It is. Okay, so here's my spectrum. And here's the part where I've expanded it out. And I want to use a big red marker to recognize that I don't want to miss this. That's really important. And then the other two things is this guy, which is DMSO D6, that's solvent, and this is TMS, which is the reference. So those are the things that are showing up in that spectrum, and then everything else is signal that's in that spectrum. And in the spectrum, they are also giving me absolute integrations. So it's 2, 4, 5, 6, and there's number 7. So I am seeing all 7 protons. And they're giving me J values, 15 hertz, 15 hertz, 8 hertz, 8 hertz. So what does that mean, 15 hertz, 15 hertz, 8 hertz, 8 hertz? Why are they giving me these? If I take and I mark off this signal and this signal, and then I copy that and move it around, can you see how it lines up right on top of those two lines? And yet it does not line up on top of those two lines. See how they're definitely not the same size? And yet these two lines over here, if I take these two lines and I make a line here and a line here, and I copy that, that lines up on top of those directly, but it does not fit with these. Okay, what that's telling me is that's telling me that these two are neighbors, and that these two are neighbors because they have the same J values, 15, 15, 8, and 8. So that's how I know that these peaks are neighbors to each other. And also, look at the roofing. The roofing is going to the right. So the only thing that could be splitting that is also to the right. Is to the right of that roofing. So those two are roofing towards each other. These two are also roofing towards each other. And when they roof towards each other, they have a likelihood of splitting each other. So whatever is causing this guy to be split by 15 hertz is upfield from it, and will also have a 15 hertz coupling constant. Whatever is splitting this one will be downfield from it and will have an 8 hertz coupling constant. That's how I read that. So that's all the information that's coming out of this. So it's time for me to make my list. Parts per million, integration, multiplicity, number of neighbors, assignment. And we might want to wait until we do the assignment afterwards. We might want to just go through and just get them down. So it looks like I'm at 6.2. It's integrating for 1. Multiplicity is a doublet. Number of neighbors is 1. And I don't know what that is yet, but that is way far downfield. 7.2. Integration for 1, doublet, 1 neighbor. And these two guys are neighbors to each other because they're each 15 hertz. Then I've got these other things that are at 7.45 for 2. And that pattern looks like a doublet. Number of neighbors would be 1. And at 7.65, 2, doublet, 1 neighbor. And these guys have an 8 hertz coupling constant. And then I've got one at what looks to be, if this is 8, 9, 10, 11, I don't know, 11.2. One proton, integration, multiplicity, singlet, number of neighbors, 0. And then I'm going to put in here exchanges. And so that exchanges means that this is some type of OH. And I'll have to figure out what type of OH that is. So now I think when we want to start to put assignments on these, let's go grab the NMR table. And let's see what the NMR table gives us. Again, I'm just using that table that's in Pavia. Okay, so 6.2, 7.2. 6.2 and 7.2 are sort of in this range. So what's coming in that range is the beginning of aromatic and the tail end of carbon-carbon double bond. The tail end of carbon-carbon double bond, I mean, it could be that they're aromatic, but the tail end of the carbon-carbon double bond range here, if we think that these might be carbon-carbon double bonds, then these could be two protons that are on a double bond somehow. And that means that these two together could be cis, could be trans, could be geminal. And that's those two. The 7.45, 7.65, these guys here, 7.45, 7.65, that's right smack in the aromatic range. So these are likely to be aromatic. And that means that I've got 4 that are aromatic protons. And with 4 that are aromatic, that means that I've got a disubstituted compound. And it could be ortho, meta, or para. Reto, you have a question.
It couldn't be meta, right? Because then you'd have 3 groups instead of 2.
That's right. So meta's out. So that you're right. You're thinking about symmetry and about how this could work with symmetry. And so that's very good. That's correct. Okay, and that 11, look at where 11.2 shows up. 11.2 is here where carboxylic acid is. And so this is likely a carboxylic acid, not an OH, but a carboxylic acid OH, where that one is showing up. And so this is giving me a good amount of information here, and I've got some questions yet. There's still some things missing. And there's some things that I don't see. There's no CH2s. There's no CHs. There's no CH3s.
I have a question on the top one there. Why is the last one part of this, the bottom right, kind of like with the two hydrogens on the right?
This one.
That one, yeah, right, that one.
Because this is a double bond that has two protons on the double bond, two protons on the double bond, and another way of getting two protons on the double bond. And those two protons are not in the same chemical environment if X and Y are...
So right, because there's, yeah, because it doesn't spin around the double bond.
That's right.
There's right. No spin. Okay, that makes
sense. No rotation. Yeah. Okay, so we've got all the parts here, and we could take a look at the carbon NMR yet. Maybe we can get some more information from the carbon NMR. But so far, what I'm seeing is just these parts, and I have not found the nitrogen. There was a nitrogen in the formula, and I haven't found it yet. So let's go take a look at the carbon NMR and see what the carbon NMR looks like. Okay, here's the carbon NMR. And if I blow it up, there's not a whole lot of interest in there to blow it up. I'm seeing everything. They're telling me everything out on the front page that I need to see. So I can just screenshot this. If I can find my button, there it is. So I don't think there's anything else that we need. I do not understand why my dogs are going as crazy as they're going today. Should I not bring it in? My dogs are distracting me. I thought I shared it. No, go check. You did. You put it in. It's just down a page. Nice. Okay, let's put it here. First off, anything that is not labeled is solvent. So we're going to take this guy and label that as solvent. Then I've got these other peaks that are here that I've got to list out. So I need chemical environments. And then I'll list out parts per million and assignment. All right, chemical environments. You simply just count up everything that's labeled. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 chemical environments. And then for parts per million, I've got 123.5, 123.9. Uh, 129.3, 141.9, 140.7. And finally, 167. All right, what are all of these? First off, there are differences in heights. Anybody remember what the differences in heights might be related to?
The integration is really the only thing that matters, right?
Right, but remember that carbons aren't integratable, and they're not integratable because certain types of carbons relax slower and drop out of the signal. So usually what happens is on a carbon that is like a CH3, they're generally really tall. CH2s are oftentimes a little bit shorter. CHs can be pretty tiny. And carbons that are quaternary that don't have any protons on them may not show up at all. That they get shorter, but they can't be integrated, but they get shorter the less hydrogens they have on them. The hydrogens help them to relax. They increase their relaxation time. And the less hydrogens they have, the shorter the signals are. And so all of these signals that are over here, that are really short signals, these guys are likely to be carbon signals that have less hydrogen on them. And these likely to have more. Okay, first off, let's start with this 167. What might that 167 be? Let's go grab the table from this morning for the carbon table. Come on, carbon table, where are you? There it is. Wrong button. Copy. One sixty-seven puts us in this range. So what does 167 likely look like?
Or an aromatic?
Could be an aromatic. What else could it be?
A ketone?
Could be a ketone. Let's go with what we know from the proton NMR. Go back and go with the proton NMR. What could it likely correspond to that exists in our proton NMR?
Aldehyde.
Not aldehyde, but carboxylic acid. So this guy.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, this guy, that carbon right there of a carbonyl is right here. I'll show you. Esters, acids, and esters. So acids and esters kind of show up in a range that is in this range and area here. And so this guy here is the carboxylic acid. So that 167, that's our carboxylic acid. So that's that guy. All right. We also said that we had some carbon-carbon double bonds, right? So two that were carbon-carbon double bond. Let's see where carbon-carbon double bond shows up. Carbon-carbon double bond shows up. That's a triple. There, double bond. Double bonds show up and overlap with aromatics. So they show up from the 100 on up to 150. So from 100 to 150, it looks like, and that looks like that's all of these. So that can be really hard to distinguish. And maybe we're not going to be able to distinguish what's what here. But what we could say is that we do know that we have a double bond and a disubstituted aromatic ring, and that this aromatic ring could show up in a number of different ways, but it has X and Y on it. We had already said that it was probably one of these two patterns because the meta would give the singlet, and we weren't seeing the singlet in the in from the meta. So it could be one of these two. And if it's one of these two, this means that I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then assuming that these guys are different, that would give me another 2. So I could say that, and I might be wrong, that those two are the double bond, alkene, and that these four are aromatic. And then I then got the carboxylic acid. What that's still not showing me is the nitrogen and two other oxygens. So when I put all these pieces together, these pieces are telling me this. They're telling me that I have some sort of double bond. I have some sort of disubstituted aromatic ring system. I have a carbonyl in the form of a carboxylic acid, and I have a nitrogen and two oxygens that are remaining in my formula. So all of this put together is C6789H1 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 N, and then four oxygens. So those are all my pieces. Now I've got two things to decide. I've got to decide on the substitution pattern on the aromatic ring, and then I've got to decide on the substitution pattern of the double bond. And then I've got to figure out my options. So is the ring ortho? Is it meta? Or is it para? In looking at these, the easiest way to distinguish them is by the number of environments. So that when we look at the number of environments on this, and we think about how many environments there are for the proton environments, there is 1, 2, 3, 4 environments. 1, 2, 3, 4 environments with a singlet, and 1, 2, 2 environments on that one. Let's go back to the proton NMR. These are my aromatics. The others are the double bond. How many environments do I have for the aromatics?
Just two.
Just two. Okay, that is settled. It has to be this pattern. Now let's settle the double bond. The double bond can have cis, trans, or geminal. These come with fairly well-known J values. The J values here are 6 to 12 hertz, 12 to 18 hertz. And 0 to 3 hertz for these types of signals. So let's go back and let's look at how many hertz it was. And that's why they're giving us the hertz, is because we need it to try to figure it out. So how many hertz is the alkene hertz? These guys here are the alkenes, and that's the value that I need to look at. 15 hertz for that J value. So I go back and I look. This is 6 to 12. This is 12 to 18. And this is 0 to 3. The only thing it can be, given the 15 hertz, is a trans coupling constant instead of a cis or a geminal. So this is something that we would have needed to look up in a table and known that we needed to look it up, and not to create any confusion, I'm going to draw that one like that so I don't create confusion later on when somebody goes back and looks at the notes. Okay, so all of these parts then, we have now come down to this. We're almost done. We have this guy. We have this guy. That guy, and that guy, where this is a nitro group. NO2 hanging out, because it isn't anything else. It's just a nitrogen and two oxygens, and they have to be all grouped together. And so an NO2. And that's fortunate because that comes out with the right number of units of unsaturation. So then there's two groups that have to be terminal. Those two groups have to be terminal. So that means that there's two possible molecules. I could have the NO2. And the carboxylic acid, like that, or the other way around. So there's my trans protons. Okay, here's the $50 million question. What's the stronger electron withdrawing group? The carboxylic acid or the nitro? Can you tell me which one is the stronger electron withdrawing group? Take your time with it. I'll tell you that positive charges are far more electron withdrawing than anything else. So this nitro group is a super kick-ass electron withdrawing group, which means that that nitro group sitting down here is going to make either that guy the farthest downfield. Or the nitro sitting here is going to make that guy the farthest downfield. So then the question is, we can look at the aromatics and we can look at the carbons, or we could simply look at the proton and say, where is this proton? Is this proton close to that guy? And are they upfield of the ring? Here, this would be downfield of the ring. This guy would pull these downfield of the aromatic ring. So it would be like this. These were doublets. And this would be the 15 hertz. And these guys would be downfield of the 8 hertz doublets. Because these guys are next to the nitro group. Or it would be the other way around, where it would be the 8 hertz and the 15 hertz, where the nitro is next to the aromatics on the aromatic groups, on the aromatic protons. So we're looking to see which group is that nitro group pulling down. Is it pulling down or pulling on the alkenes, or is it pulling on the aromatics? Which one is farthest downfield?
The aromatic.
The aromatic is farther downfield, for sure. The aromatic is farther downfield. So if the aromatic is farther downfield, then that is this guy. And that would be our correct structure. This was a much harder one. This had a lot more going on in it. Had more types of functional groups, had more variability, had more uncertainty in it. And yet we applied all the same skill sets. We didn't change the skill sets at all in how we attacked it. We applied a little bit of new information, but in how we attacked the problem, we did it exactly the same way. And when there were multiple things that we needed to decide, we decided those multiple things individually. So we went through and we did the ring first, then we did the double bond, or we could have done the double bond and then we could have done the ring, but you attack them one at a time. So when there are things where there are options, you attack those options one at a time until you nail down that option, and then you move on to the next one and attack them one at a time until you figure them out. And then you put them together in however many ways there are possible. And then you figure out which one is the right one. And we could go through and we could do a little prediction and say how this is going to work and how many chemical environments this is. And we should have a series of checks. You should check your formula. Check chemical environments. Check the proton NMR for the splittings and integration. And I wouldn't bother checking the carbon as much. If you check those three things, those three things are going to make it solid. So I think I'm advocating here several different roles. Number one, it's a system of going through it, and that system is sort of circular, that I go back through and I look at pieces of information multiple times. It is tracking your information really carefully. It is narrowing down your options. And then building models and testing the models and seeing which model fits the closest. And I think that's the entire system of how to go through and do these. And this is like the most difficult one that you would see. I'm not going to give you things that are going to be more difficult than this. And you're not going to see one that's like this on the easy problems on WebSpectra. WebSpectra has its own difficulties because sometimes it doesn't tell you which ones are exchanging. That's kind of a chintzy move on their part. But other than that, the spectrum are clean enough and the integrations are good. You just have to work on the integrations. So I would say keep working on the WebSpectra ones and keep working on these and see if today didn't help some more. We went through a lot of skills between this morning and now. All right. Any questions? Lots of questions.
Less amounts of questions.
It's probably lots of questions.
Hopefully this will be better.
Yeah, I hope it'll be better too. Shoot me some things on the Discord. When you get stuck on some problems, let me know what problem you're stuck on. Let me see if I can get you unstuck and moving forward. So, and if you find that you're getting stuck in one area, then try attacking it from a different perspective or try moving more into a predictive role as opposed to allowing the problem to get you stuck. You got to find a way to get it unstuck in some way.
It's maybe the first time in a long time that there's problems that have many approaches, like not just a linear sequence of steps that you follow. It's like a tree that kind of converges. You can go at it from multiple sides.
Absolutely. There's no right or wrong way to attack these problems. What I would say is that there's approaches that are going to work differently for different people, and you need to find what works for you. For me, I kind of like to bounce around a little bit. But I think that the system that I've given you, particularly what I gave you this morning in the lab notes, I think I wrote it down. Yeah, units of unsaturation, proton and carbon first impressions, so that you have an idea what you're looking for. Deep dive into the proton NMR, get your table going. Same for the carbon. Look to see, are they saying the same thing? Are they giving you the same information? Look for or identify the parts. Look for connectivity. Those are your J values and trying to figure out, or the roofing, figuring out who's talking to who, number of neighbors. Look back at units of unsaturation. Make sure you're seeing everything. Start drawing your options. Start eliminating options, get down to one. And so that's that predictive component. If you've got to be able to look at what you're drawing, and you've got to be able to see, is what you're drawing matching what the spectrum, what the predicted spectrum is. And so I think in there is a pretty good summary of how I go about and do these. And as we go on, we're going to throw mass spec into it. Mass spec has its own thing, but then mass spec will be part of an NMR problem, and you'll have to get the formula from the mass spec before you can even move on to NMR. So the problems get more complicated, and that right now, at least we know what the formula is. Pretty soon, we won't even know what the formula is. So trying to do this without the formula, that starts to get interesting. But that's where we're going. That's what we've got to be able to do.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool, actually. I mean, it's fun to hit something that is such a challenging puzzle that it takes more than just, you know, a couple of minutes of looking at something. This is fun, if that's what you consider to be fun. All right, I'm way over time. I'm going to let you guys run.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for hanging in there with me.
Thank you.